hoping for a much better weekend this weekend in Northeast Ohio when it comes to sports. Think about it. Last weekend, the Indians got no hit. The Buckeyes were defeated at home by Oregon, and the Browns blew a game they should have won at Kansas City. So hopefully the Browns and the Buckeyes at least will get victories this coming weekend. And we just talked Browns with Daryl Ryder. Let's talk Buckeyes now with Steve Hellwagon from Bucknuts.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Steve Hellwagon. He joins us via the Wake 'em Way hotline. Steve, thanks for making time for us. What's been the fallout in Columbus this week over that loss in which they were favored by 14 and lost by 7 to Oregon?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are very upset about the play of the Ohio State defense. And I think that's obviously where the discussion begins. The offense put up over 600 yards, and yet they had some issues on their own, which we can get into. But certainly it was the defensive side of the football that let Ohio State down time and again. Oregon scored three touchdowns basically on the same play, running the ball to the boundary side, the short side of the field where the hash mark, you know, is the ball's out to that side. It's considered the boundary side because it's the, you know, close boundary. Then, it, you know, the wide side's the other side, obviously, and it flips depending on which hash mark the ball's on. But all three times to the left, they executed the same running play for touchdowns, and nobody even really touched the runner. And it was just terrible execution by the Ohio State defense. And you would think after the first time it happened, there would have been an adjustment, but there wasn't. And we could sit here and talk for 2 or 3 hours about everything that went wrong defensively for Ohio State in that game. But Ryan Day came out in his press conference yesterday, said that they are studying any and all remedies to the situation, and said that Kerry Combs remains the defensive coordinator, at least in title. But he may or may not be calling the defense this week when they tee it up against Tulsa, 3:30 on Saturday at Ohio Stadium. So some interesting times for a team that many thought was just going to walk its way through this schedule and win the Big Ten and go on to the playoff. Now some major, major questions regarding the defensive side of the football with this team.
Wait a minute, Steve. Does that mean Al Washington would call the defense, or would that go to Larry Johnson?
You know, your guess is as good as mine.
Wow.
It could be Matt Barnes, who
really?
You know, is also involved. So, yeah, it is a very troubling situation. I'll just say that. And you're going to ask me a lot of pointed questions, and I don't have any answers for them.
I'm going to ask you one. This is kind of wide open. You mentioned it. You said execution. Now, my entire thing all week long has it been personnel, or has it been the defensive schematics? I'm not going to get into this Brian Kelly, John McKay execution. Go ahead and execute my team. Forget about that. The jokes are over. It's time to get serious about this defense. Are they out of place, or are they outmanned?
That's a great question. I think that obviously Jim Moorhead, the offensive coordinator from Oregon, formerly Penn State, had a good idea what to do to attack Ohio State's defense because he played against the Buckeyes previously. Mm-hmm. So that helped their cause. And I think that Ohio State put a scheme on the field that they thought would contain Oregon. And as it turned out, I don't think the players executed the scheme properly. I think that the players, being inexperienced and some of them unable to get through blocks physically, speed, size, however you want to put it, were unable to execute exactly what they wanted done, and maybe made misreads or whatever just out of inexperience. And the result is what you get. You know, you get three touchdowns. Basically, they mm-hmm. took the baseball bat out of your hand and hit you over the head with it three times and did it in front of the entire world to see, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it's embarrassing.
It was.
And you know, this strikes at the heart. I mean, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, these are programs that are supposed to be a cut above everybody else in terms of talent, scheme, and everything else. Well, it was laid bare for the world to see that, you know, they may not have the talent that everyone thinks they have, and they may not have the schematic advantage that that they should have, and left with a lot of excuses and a lot of a hand-wringing over, you know, how are they going to get this solved? Yeah, you know, I don't know if their issues are solvable, to
this
be honest.
This loss
with you,
was a lot
based
different.
Based on what I saw.
This loss was a lot different than Purdue or Iowa. You're right.
Yeah, I think it was because, you know, in those situations, you're on the road. against an inspired opponent who, you know, in Iowa's case has, you know, similar personnel. Oregon probably pretty similar. I looked at their recruiting. We talked about it last week that their classes have averaged 11th in the country in the last 5 years. Ohio State's have averaged 5th. So the recruiting advantage, just slight for Ohio State, should be. But you know, part of the problem is you have an offensive-minded head coach. And I looked at the last three classes since he took over as the head coach in December of 2018 when Urban stepped aside. And they've taken 17 national top 100 offensive players. They've got, you know, 8 or 9 wide receivers that they're tripping over in this period as well. Quarterbacks galore, and yet only 8 or 9 guys in the same category on defense. So
there you go.
That number kind of jumps out at you that you had an offensive-minded head coach that, you know, for whatever reason, they didn't recruit the same level of talent on defense that they did on offense.
And that's where I want to go with you, Steve Helwagen. Great job by you in pointing that out. That's why we love having Steve on from Bucknuts.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Steve Helwagen, because Ryan Day has been getting all this love, man. Hadn't lost a regular season game. Still hasn't lost a Big Ten game, yada, and all this. And I'm sitting there going, you know what, though? He's been doing it with part of Urban Meyer's classes, right? Now we're into year number 3 where these guys are coming through, where these are Ryan Day's recruits. So does some of the blame start to fall on Ryan Day? And like you said, the target of those recruits being more offense than defense, and it's rearing its ugly head now on the field.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You look at the linebacker group with Bill Davis, who was more on the staff because he was good friends with Urban Meyer than because he was a great linebackers coach. They didn't recruit any great linebackers in the time that he was there, and that's coming home to roost because you don't have any playmakers at the linebacker position. The two best linebackers who are connected with Ohio State right now, the Kid Powers at Marysville High School and C.J. Hicks at Kettering Alter, they're high school seniors. They're the two best linebackers in the program, and they're high school seniors. So that'll tell you point blank right there what I think about the talent level that they're putting on the field at linebacker right now. It's not up to snuff. Then we jump to the cornerback position. For everything you want to say about Kerry Combs and blank him on this and blank him on that or whatever. But
I have to start using that one on Lane Avenue on Saturdays.
Yes. you want to say whatever you want about him. In the 2 or 3 years he was gone, they did not recruit a national top 100 cornerback. And the last one they got was Tyreek Johnson, kid out of Jacksonville, who was a complete bust and has transferred to Nebraska. So in the time since he's been back, limited time, they took two of them this past year, Denzel Burke, who is starting now for Ohio State as a true freshman, and J.K. Johnson, another kid who's got a lot of promise, you know, down the line. You know, so what I'm telling you is Ryan Shazier and Raekwon McMillan and Jerome Baker aren't walking through that door, and neither are Jeffrey Okuda, Malik Hooker, or any All-Americans in the secondary. They just ain't got it. And, you know, that you're making do with what you got, and you saw the end result. You saw inexperienced kids out of position, biting on fakes, you know, the touchdown to the tight end over Eichenberg for one. Shaw also biting on that play. And then, you know, obviously the long run, Shaw takes himself out of position, not in position to make the play on the long run either. So there's 5 touchdowns we just laid out for you. They did 3 of them on the same play. The one to the tight end, the safety and the linebacker were out of position, bit on the fake. And then the touchdown, the 77-yard run, they hit it perfectly. Ohio State's front 7 was in bad run fits, and the safety took himself out of the play, and the guy was gone.
Yeah.
So misplays, inexperience, guys that just can't get off block.
All of the above.
Don't make plays. In this game, no quarterback sacks, 83 plays Oregon ran. You would think, well, in 83 plays, Ohio State had 7, 8, 10 tackles for loss. They had 1.
They were never in the backfield, though. That offense,
they don't change the line of scrimmage.
That offense was never in the backfield. That was the problem. Oregon ran so many quick and misdirected plays that our defensive front was never in their backfield. So there was no chance. So what you had to do in this game is, like Nick Saban said, you're not going to win on the premise of defense. You're going to have to outpoint that team. So I want to take the focus off the defense for a second, Steve Howwagon, and ask you about the offense. Now, people look at this offense and say, C.J. Stroud had a pretty decent game. You can look at it and say the kid almost passed for 500 yards. But I look at it and say at times he doesn't make his reads and his progressions and his checkdowns quick enough. Am I right or am I wrong?
I think there could be something to that. I think, you know, they put up 600 yards, but a lot of those yards were hollow.
From behind.
Mm-hmm. They didn't complete drives. When they got it into Oregon territory a few times, they got stopped on fourth and two on a play that a lot of people have said they should have called a timeout because Oregon had the proper run fit to stop that running play. Which was, I believe, from the right hash into the right boundary. They tried to run a play, and it didn't work. They were 2 of 5 on fourth down. They were only 6 of 15 on third down, which isn't going to get it done either. So, you know, you got something there. They moved the ball between the 20s pretty effectively. Three guys in the receiver corps had 100 yards with Smith, Najigba, Wilson, and Olave. So all that's good. All that's positive. We got to remember that this is Stroud, a redshirt freshman, in his second career start, and he completed 65% of his passes for 484 yards, second most in school history. And yet there are some negative bullet points, and I'll point out to you. First of all, the interception that he threw, he was under duress, and really on third and 18, 3 minutes to go, about the same as a punt. That really didn't kill them when they didn't get a stop on the ensuing possession. That the game was over at that point, but they had a holding penalty that put him in that predicament. So the guys around him in that instance didn't hold up their end of the bargain. I think one thing that he can do and is going to have to do is run the football.
Take off.
And he looked very tentative trying to run the football, only had three running plays in this game. Plus he was sacked two other times. So he credited with five carries. And to me, he has got to be involved in the run game. Now, is he nursing a shoulder injury? Is that why they didn't run him from Minnesota?
Thank you.
Was he running gingerly to protect himself? I think all that's true. But we saw last year against Michigan State, they said it was an 80-yard touchdown run. My recollection was it was more like a 50-yard touchdown run in mop-up time against Michigan State. But whatever it was, he can run. So he has got to be able in the zone read to keep that run because they were keying on the running backs. Neither Henderson nor Mayan Williams really got off in this game in terms of running the football. And Ohio State limited for the first time in recent memory running the football. That's their bread and butter. So it was out of whack offensively, way too much passing, not enough rushing. But again, when you're behind 7 and 14 points the entire game, you're trying to play catch up and you're trying to move it down the field. They really, really, Day said he does kick himself for not trying to establish the run a little bit more in the second half.
Well, and to me, that's a trend with Ryan Day because he likes to go for the home run ball. He loves the big play, whereas when you have supposedly one of the best offensive lines in the entire country and the greatest room of running backs they've had in a long time from what they told us right this offseason, Steve, with all that talent there, you should be running the ball more to take the pressure off of that quarterback who might have an injured shoulder. And that's where I want to go with all of this, Steve. Was Ryan Day asked if he's hurt? Because a lot of times when you miss high or wide or you overthrow, it's because you do have a shoulder injury and you can't follow through. What did Ryan Day say to that?
I think the shoulder is actually his left non-throwing shoulder, I believe. So I don't think it affects him. I think his problem, you're right, accuracy is a small problem with him on some of his throws. I think when he gets flustered, his footwork betrays him, and the quarterback is a product of his footwork and getting his base under him, following through his throws. And I think on some cases the ball does have a tendency to sail on him. It sailed on him on the interception, obviously, on the sideline, and it went over Olave's head and behind him and went to the defender. And a couple other times, he had Olave on a deep pass, and it seemed to have gone off Olave's hands, which, you know, would have been nice if he had completed that one. I mean, if they make that connection, instead of 14-7 at halftime, it's 14-14 at halftime, and you feel a little bit better about yourself Instead, you come out and immediately fall behind 21-7, and now you are in an absolute world of hurt. At that point, you have got your margin for error on what you can do offensively is nil. You got to score every time you have the ball after that, and that caught up with them, obviously, in the end. I just think that, again, on one hand, I want to say he was almost uncanny. He threw a ball down the seam to Jackson Smith Najigba for a touchdown, and he put it into the tightest of windows over the defender and right into Jackson Smith Najigba for a touchdown. So I think he's got something there. There is. Just imagine when he gets this all figured out how good he could possibly be, because, you know, he did complete 65% of his passes, 484 yards, and a lot of it is the product of great protection at times, although he was sacked twice late in the game when obviously they had to throw it, and Oregon was coming with the kitchen sink blitzes. And he's got those three great receivers. First time in OSU history, a trio of receivers over 100 yards in the same game. A little bit of history was made, but again, it's kind of like Haskins throwing for almost 500 yards in the loss at Purdue. It's like very hollow. It doesn't mean anything when you the quarterback at Ohio State is judged by one thing and one thing alone. We learned many decades ago, and that is winning the football game. That's right. So that's all that matters.
All right, Steve Hellwagon, let's go back to where we started all of this, okay? And that's with Kerry Combs. JT and I pointed out earlier in the show that USC fired its head coach, Clay Helton, after two games when they went 1-1. Tulsa isn't a top 25 team. Tulsa's coming to Ohio State for a noon kickoff. Tulsa is a team Ohio State should beat by 4 touchdowns. What if Tulsa puts up 28 points or 30 points on Ohio State? The Buckeyes win, but they squeak by. Is Kerry Holmes' job on the line this week?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that those are some tough discussions that Ryan Day is probably having with Kerry Combs and other members of the defensive staff, maybe the athletic director, Gene Smith, right now, about what's going to happen. There was a story at Navy. Navy football, you know, because of COVID or whatever, has kind of gone downhill the last couple of years with Ken Niumatalalo, I think, is their head coach. And the athletic director, Chet Gladchuck, came to him and said, you've got to fire the offensive coordinator. We're not generating anything on offense. And everybody knows their whole offense is whatever it is, the triple option or whatever, running the football. How difficult is it to select from running left, right, or up the middle? But so he did. He fired him, but then he went back to the athletic director and he said, we need to keep this guy on staff because he's too valuable. And they kept him as the quarterback's coach, and he agreed to it. So okay. Are we looking at something like that with Kerry Combs? I just bring that around to the parallel to what's going on sure. At Ohio State. I think Kerry Combs is coaching for his job at this point, whether it is a spot on the staff, as a position coach, or to continue as the defensive coordinator. Believe me, he did not get a vote of confidence in any way, shape, or form from Ryan Day in the Tuesday comments. Bill Landis from the Athletic used to work at Cleveland.com, piped up and asked at the end, is Kerry Combs still the defensive coordinator in title? And that's when Ryan Day kind of let out a little chuckle, because people had approached him on 8 different levels about this. And he laughed, and I think people took umbrage at that. You know, the coach at Ohio State's laughing after they lost the game. He's laughing out of, like, self-deprecation at that point that you've asked me this question 9 different ways. He is still the defensive coordinator, but it's up in the air who's calling the defense beginning with this next game. So, you know, I guess check back for further details. Maybe tomorrow they'll have a quick hit media session Thursday afternoon at noon. And after that, after the game, we can ask him if he wants to share what's happened. But they are real big about keeping everything in house over there right now. They don't need their want everybody to know their business. So they are trying to rally the wagon, or circle the wagons, as they say, to get this thing fixed.
Well, Steve, all I know is this. They were one of the worst, if not the worst, in pass defense last year. The pass defense still sucks this year, and now the run defense sucks as well. That's not a good combination for a team that's supposed to contend for a national championship. We'll see how it plays out this week against Tulsa, and everybody can hear that game right here on WHBC. And follow the pregame stuff and the postgame stuff at bucknuts.com with our good buddy Steve Hellwagon and his outstanding staff. Steve, we always appreciate the time. Great insight, as always. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. All right, bud?
All right, guys. Take care.
Steve Hellwagon checking in via the Wake 'em Way hotline here on the Kenny and JT Show.